Hey everybody, and welcome to Rider Club Radio Spoiler Cast 3, Kamen Rider Kuga Spoiler Cast. I'm your host, Jeff.
And I'm Liam. And today we're not going to be talking about Kamen Rider Ghost Episode 13 because it didn't get released.
Nope, not until next week. So this time around we're going to be talking around Kamen Rider Kuga, which is a series starring Onodera Yusuke as he travels from world to world with our hero, Kamen Rider Decade. He mostly acts as Decade's sidekick, and continually gets his ass beat in order to make the other characters seem stronger. How do you feel about this character, Liam?
It's a very iconic series, it's a very iconic character, really a classic, really brought Kamen Rider into a new age, very strong, loved it. 10 out of 10.
Is the first Kamen Rider series ever. It was released in 2010.
Starring a writer called, like, A.U. Kuga? I'm not really sure what the A.U. stood for. I think it was, like, a new thing that Rider was doing in that day.
I know what the A stands for.
What's that?
Awesome.
Awesome Ultimate Kuga.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shit.
My favorite character is Onodera Yusuke.
My favorite character is Decade.
Wow, you have shit taste, Liam.
So, Jeff, before we get into actually talking about the real meat of Kuga, before we get into the real plot details, the real spoilers, why don't you give us, we'll both give, like, a little overview. What did you think of Kuga overall?
Maybe we should probably actually talk about the real Kamen Rider Kuga.
Yeah, that's, I figured people would realize that was a fake. We're not going to be talking about Decade. If you were tricked, I'm sorry. You're not a smart one.
No, you are not a smart person.
So what did you think of Kuga, Jeff? Do you like it? Do you hate it? What?
Kuga's one of my favorite series. Not just in Kamen Rider, but ever.
Ooh, like favorite TV of all time.
Yeah, one of my favorite TVs.
Well, TV is shit, usually, so.
Yeah.
It stands
TV's
head and shoulders.
Just started to become good these days.
And even then, it's like picking little things out that are pretty good.
Yeah, it's very, very hit or miss,
yeah.
Even in the shows that are good.
Yeah, even good shows tend to have really shitty things about them, but we're not talking about TV in general. Tonight we're talking about Kuga, motherfucker.
I love Kuga. I love a lot of the characters in Kuga. In a lot of Kamen Rider series, whenever somebody is on screen that isn't a writer, I'm bored to tears.
Okay.
Because they're there to fill time until the action scene happens.
Yeah.
At least in a lot of, like, newer stuff.
Yeah.
And that's a big complaint that people have about newer series, is that the secondary characters don't seem to add anything to the series besides being a damsel in distress or just existing.
Yeah, sometimes they give the hero some shit, but, like, they don't have arcs, generally, in the newer series.
No.
That was one of the things that Kuga did, I think, strongest and better than most other Rider series, is that it keeps using its characters for the whole breadth of the series. Even Tsubaki, who's that doctor, the throwaway character who could have been... He could have just been once, always get a belt in him and then just leave him. But they keep bringing him back, because every time the belt keeps growing and changing, and they keep bringing the doctor back, and he's trying to go on dates, and he he's got, like, a life. He feels like a real character. And he didn't really have many arcs, but there were other. Enokita was one of my favorites. There's a whole subplot that lies under so much of the show, how she's trying to reconnect with her son, and she's too much of a workaholic. She's got to keep making the bullets and stuff, and she's doesn't have enough time to be a mother.
And that is a good payoff, and includes other characters that you wouldn't imagine being included as well. Like, Jean becomes a part of that storyline, when mostly he's just been showing up and saying, hello!
You see, good morning! And then he speaks in perfect Japanese for the rest of the... Yeah, the characters sort of interact with each other, and they do stuff throughout the whole series. I don't know if I like Kuga as much as you like Kuga, Jeff. I think Kuga is very, very good. Don't get me wrong, I enjoy it a lot.
You have a problem with the episodic meat in the center of the two delicious artisan buns that are the beginning and end of the series.
I talk a lot about Black and how Black is like the show of formula at its best. And I stick true to that, and I think Kuga is that same show of formula close to its best. And it's not that...
It's like Kuga's show of formula, but it's also like a J-drama over top of
it. Yeah, and I think that J-drama over top of it adds to it a lot. It's just that the show of formula is something that, like, I'm not a huge fan of. I'm not the biggest fan of it, unless the action is really good.
Well, the problem with the show of formula is that, like, we're shotgunning these shows.
Mm.
We're not, like... going into them thinking, well, I'm going to watch this once a week and get some cool action and then move on.
Yeah.
We're looking for, like, deep introspective stories that continue episode to episode, and that's not the way the series is really supposed to be viewed.
Yeah, that's true.
We're probably coming at, like, the entire Kamen Rider series the wrong way for that.
except for the currently airing series. But I think even Black I enjoyed more around its middle section, just because the action and the special effects are so good in Black.
The action's, like, far more polished, I would say, in Black, and that's, like, a tick in Kuga's box for me in a way. In a different way, I guess, because I love the action in Black. But the more down-to-earth, realistic tone that Kuga has, I mean, there's monsters, there's transforming from form to form, but the way all of it is laid out is very, like, if there was a Kamen Rider, this is what it would be like.
Yeah, I remember when I was watching Kuga, I was around the midpoint, and I was like, wow, this is the most realistic Rider series I've ever seen. The police actually get involved and do stuff. And they talk about how the monsters affect society and things like that, and how the cops are constantly having meetings, and they're like, oh my god, what do we do about this shit? We make these bullets. And
even the way the characters interact is far more realistic than in most other series. Like, nobody just decides not to tell all the other characters pertinent information that causes nothing but problems for, like, 12 episodes.
there's no dumb forced shit.
No.
There is J-drama.
The characters interact in a very realistic manner. Like, they're all focused on this one guy.
Yeah.
So they all end up crossing paths because of it, and getting to know each other.
Yeah, there is J-drama, but it's not dumb. It's not overly forced. And I thought that was, like I said before, in the middle part of the season where it starts to slow down, the drama was more of the draw for me.
It's a character-driven series in that way.
Yeah.
Like, the plot itself stalls pretty heavily, but I feel like the character-driven portion of it really picks up during that part.
Absolutely. So that's our overall thoughts about Kuga. It's a good series. It has many strengths. It has a few weaknesses with pacing, I think.
Yeah, it's not perfect, and that's usually what people's biggest problem is with the series, is that it ends up being very episodic.
Yeah, people, it's a really clunky nickname I hear given to it, is Sloga.
God, that's
It sounds awful. Really stupid, but it's not wrong. It's a slow-moving show in the middle. And that's, it's one of the reasons why it took me a million quadrillion years to finish.
That sounds like a fucking cartoon horn. Slow. That's the best I can do, folks!
Well, you did good. It's a very stupid word. It's a hard word to work with.
Trying to put some jokes in the podcast.
You tried it real hard. You tried real hard.
So that's our overall, like, just quick opinions about the show. If you don't want spoilers, this is a spoiler cast, so I'm a little confused about what you want from us. But you can turn it off now and you'll avoid all the spoilers.
Yeah, from here on.
The fact that Kuga dies.
Oh, that's a fake one, don't worry.
That is a fake spoiler.
But from here on...
or is it?
From this exact time code on, you are no longer safe.
If you don't want to hear spoilers, please skip to this time code.
Turn the podcast off, you gotta fuck it!
So we can get into the meat and potatoes of this series now.
Okay.
The specifics.
Okay. When you watched Kuga's beginning, when you first saw, like, that first like, arc, or the first few arcs, the whole first act, the setting up, what did you think of that bit, Jeff? Did you think... because I thought it was the strongest part of the series.
Yeah, I did too. When I first started out, Kuga was not the first series that I'd seen. Mm-hmm. I'd seen a few beforehand. So I was a little bit worried, because I'd seen Ryuki before Kuga, and I was a little bit worried that Godai was going to end up being a Shinji-type character, like an idiot who gets shit on the whole series.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's really goofy, Godai is. But he's far more, like, warm-hearted and friendly, mm-hmm. instead of just being, like, brain-damaged. What would you call Shinji?
Shinji was a goof. He was an idiot.
Yeah.
They try to set him up as, like, oh, he likes to gather data, and that's his thing, and then they just drop it real quick, and he's just a dummy.
He's an idiot.
Yeah. But Kuga is, like, I guess since we're talking about the intro, and we're talking about character setup in the first arc, we can talk about Godai a little.
Yeah.
Because Godai, I think, is a big draw in this series, and I think he's one of the reasons why people like him so much. They're right, because Godai is a really great character, and he's not a terribly realistic character, I would say.
No, he's very much like an idealized type of character, like a cartoon kind of person.
He's not the guy you are, he's the guy you want to be.
Yeah, he's just a really, really great guy. And I've heard people level complaints at this series saying, oh, he's like a Mary Sue.
I've heard that thrown around in many places as well, yeah.
But he's like a complete weirdo. Did you not see the series? He's like, everyone who meets him to begin with is very off-put by him and has to warm up to him. And he does things that no normal human being should ever do. Like, he sneaks into a...
He sneaks into that archaeological dig site.
Yeah, the archaeological dig site. He just sneaks in with cops everywhere. Like, no human being would ever do that.
That's one of my favorite... Because the show sets up Godai so well. It introduces you to him so well. At first, you have that scene that Gaim completely ripped off, where he helps the crying child find his mom.
Yeah.
And he, like, juggles for him. And then you have the bit where he sneaks into the dig site, and he's... the way he does it is he just, like, power walks past the cops, and he's like, oh, sorry, I'm late, boss, I'll get right to work. And they're like, oh, hang on, you motherfucker.
Like, he's a huge goofball. He's not a Mary Sue because the characters don't start out all sucking his dick. He has to prove himself continually to every character he meets throughout the show. The only character that starts out all about him is Nana,
the little girl
waitress at the tea shop.
I remember Ichijo, when they first meet, Ichijo says, like, you might be a superhero, Kuga, but you can't just run around like an idiot. You have to be 100% in on it. You have to, like, he doesn't immediately trust him. He doesn't immediately think he's the best man for the job.
No, he tells him he can't get involved with police business to begin with, straight up. He says, look, this is not your concern. I don't care what you have to say about it, who brought you in, what kind of belt you have fused to your spinal cord. You're not allowed. And Godai does it anyway.
Yeah.
And Ichijo, like, rips him a new asshole. He, like, chews him out.
Yeah, and that's where he says,
like, him
don't...
at all to begin with.
Like, it's serious business. We can't have an idiot involved and getting shot at and possibly fucking everything up. So it's a building of trust. And the scene, I think, in the church, in the burning church, where Kuga finally decides to fight, and when he first turns into Mighty Form, I believe. They don't name the forms in the actual show, but it's Mighty, Dragon, Titan, and Pegasus.
Yeah, it's Mighty Form that he transforms into in the church.
That is a fantastic scene when they're fighting the bat monster.
It really is.
And it's that, like, okay, fucking Kuga's here. The show's begun. It's
I actually
on.
Really like that he had, like, the growing form to begin with.
Yeah.
And he struggled to be able to learn how to go beyond that form. He wasn't strong enough. He kept losing. And that was a really great introduction to the power of being Kuga.
Yeah. It took him so long because he was growing. The way I think about Kuga in my head, his character, not like his powers or anything, and this might be a statement that I don't know if you'll agree with it, Jeff, but I think he's kind of something like a Japanese Superman kind of character, where, like, he's not, like I said, he's not realistic. He's just this 100%, like, down-to-earth, he's nice, he just wants to help everyone. And you like watching him because of that. You can't, like, he's not real, he's not terribly relatable, he's not like Kagami, where, like, you see him and he's just like an office schlub, and you're like, oh, I like that guy, he's a relatable guy, he's a loser, just like me. But you look at
Kuga... It's something to aspire to, really.
Yeah,
like, he's a character that's made to inspire you to try to be a better person.
Yeah, and he's fun to watch because he's so... He's this shining light in this violent, awful world full of monsters and evil. He's the one in the middle who is...
He has to, like, struggle as well. He isn't just handed all this power on a silver platter and just mows through everybody as it goes along. He struggles physically, emotionally, and spiritually as the series gets towards its end.
Mm-hmm. I remember...
With the weight of what he has to deal with and what he's becoming.
Yeah, he falters a couple times. I remember there's the famous porcupine arc, when he finds out all the students are being killed, and there's like 2 10th grade students left in the school, and he is so fucking pissed off, and he doesn't act like his usual, like, happy-go-lucky self. He doesn't goof around. He fucking punches the shit out of the porcupine until he's bleeding on the ground, and then he stabs him with the sword, and then he blows up. It's a great arc, and there's another one later on, I don't remember exactly which arc it is, but he's looking at a TV, and it's listing off the victims of a recent Grongi attack, and it's like all these, like it's like a fucking, like, 150 people, and he's like pissed off, and his fist is all clenched, and he's nervous, and it's, I think it's Daguva that's done it, it's like the final arc of the series, and he's really upset. You can tell he's upset, and then someone comes in the room, and he turns around, and he puts that smile on, because he's fucking Kuga, and he knows that if he falters, if he says, oh, I don't know if I can do this, then everyone's gonna think all hope is lost. He does it for everyone else. He fights for everyone's smiles, not just physically, but with his whole demeanor.
You know, I wasn't really on the same page as you when you started out this, like, comparison to Superman.
Mm.
Because you used the logic that everybody tends to use with Superman is that he's not relatable.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, powers-wise, nobody knows what the hell it's like to be like that.
Yeah.
But responsibilities-wise, I think we all have had, like, really weighty responsibilities on our shoulders before.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the whole side of Superman, the Clark Kent side, that's just a dude who found out he was a fucking alien at some point. And
yeah.
That's the Superman I enjoy, the guy who's like, oh, what the fuck? I was just plowing a field the other day. What is this? And I think there's a lot of that in Kuga as well. He was just some, like, goofy dude who liked to make people smile.
You can't even say he's, like, a farmer or anything. He's just some freeder. He lives with his uncle. That's all he does.
Yeah. He's just a freeloader. Yeah, you're right.
How many writers actually have jobs?
You know, a lot of Showa writers have jobs, and there are a lot of early Heisei writers, all the way up to, I don't even think Decade actually has a job. They list him as photographer, but he doesn't get paid for it.
Yeah, I'm sure he's not even freelance or anything. There's a
ton of just, like, freeloaders.
I know Ryuki was a journalist. That one was obvious. But Kuga's got nothing. Agito's got nothing. Does Fias have anything? I don't think Fias has a job.
You know, Blade is a company man. Being a writer is his job.
That's kind of cool. Kind of like Drive. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Post-Decade, a lot of writers have jobs.
Yeah.
Except Oz. Oz is a hobo. He owns one pair of underpants.
Oh, all he wants is clean underpants.
Well, he has to. He's only got the one. That's a big concern.
Oh. Yeah, I love...
Yeah, Godai's a freeloader. He just accidentally... Well, actually, it's not an accident.
He grabs it.
Chooses to put the belt on so that he can protect people, because not even knowing what it is.
Because he's a real motherfucking hero. He doesn't second-guess himself. He sees a chance and he takes it. That's why you like him.
He's kind of, like, brainless in a way.
Yeah.
He runs entirely on emotion.
Yeah. And that's why Ichijo doesn't trust him.
He's not particularly clever.
Yeah. Well, we're digging real far into Godai. How the fuck did he afford those trips that he always went on?
I don't know.
He, like, tours Europe and backpacks through Ireland and shit like that. And he doesn't have a fucking job.
He's freeloading off his uncle.
What is this? He just take his uncle's profits? And...
Yeah, he's like, hey, uncle, I'm going to go to Cambodia. I'm going to take a trip to Indonesia. Just give me the money.
He's like, yo, I just, like, your profits from the last month, I just took, like, 3/4 of them and going to Brazil. See you in 3 weeks, fucker.
He goes to the airport by himself and just gives people thumbs up as they go past until eventually they buy a ticket.
Oh, the iconic thumbs up.
In the last episode of the series, everyone gives everyone else a thumbs up.
Of course.
They've all learned from Godai.
We'll talk about the last episode a little later. What do you think about Godai's foil, Ichijo?
Ichijo starts out as a character that I really, really identified with more than Godai. Because Godai made the dumbest decisions you could possibly make at the beginning of the series, and it led him to becoming Kuga, so it was all the right decisions.
In the end, yeah.
In the end. But Ichijo's like, what the fuck are you doing? Are you stupid? You can't just jump into the police business and, like, start punching monsters?
Yeah.
What's wrong with you? And eventually, he warms up to Godai and starts doing everything in his power to make sure that Kuga's capable of fighting these monsters. He understands, long before the rest of the police division, whatever, understands that Kuga's the only hope they have.
Yeah, they don't have, like, the bullets they get, I think they get bullets later that stun them, but they don't have actual bullets that can kill them until, like, fucking the 40s or something, way, way later. Yeah.
And even then, they don't really
they don't do
get much.
Much
use out of
that
them.
Part where he fucking shoots B1.
Yeah. He just fucking empties his goddamn revolver into her, and she just falls in a river.
That was one of my favorite... I think that's why a lot of people call Ichijo a secondary rider, in a way, because he does shit a lot. He gets shit done, despite not having a belt. Ichijo just fucking blows her out with his gun. Yeah. Just shoots her. That was awesome. It was fucking great.
A lot of secondary riders don't get to do that shit.
Yeah.
They exist to get their asses beat to make the main rider look good, and here's Ichijo, without even a belt, just shooting a monster to death.
He really knew what was up, and he was actually helpful a lot of the time. He had that rifle, and he would always put the special bullets in it, and he knew what to do. He would investigate, and he would direct Kuga to know where to go and shit like that.
Yeah, he was like Kuga's brains, really.
He was the man behind the hero. He was...
Kuga's not an idiot. Godai's not stupid or anything. He doesn't think very often. He runs on instinct and emotion. So Ichijo being there for him, being like his partner, is the balance.
Plus, he's like the straight man.
Yeah.
You know, Godai's really goofy, and Ichijo is like a company man. He's a very, like, kind of stodgy policeman. He follows the procedure.
And we're making Godai seem like he does over-the-top goofy shit like later riders. Like, he's not Shotaro.
Yeah.
He's not, like, making goofy faces and screaming and stuff. Like, the humor is really subtle in this series. Maybe not as subtle as, like, Downton Abbey humor. I don't know what that show's about. But it's not, like... running around tripping and hitting people with shoes. Double had a lot of humor.
It usually just comes from Godai just being a weird kind of guy.
Yeah, he's a weirdo.
Yeah, bit of a weirdo.
And it's funny. Especially because Ichijo is 100% serious. He's not later Heisei serious where he overreacts to everything.
And if
for a comedic effect, it was a post, he reacts like a normal person.
If it was like something I made around Kabuto era... or something like that, and Ichijo was the secondary rider, he would probably be trying to kill Godai, like, from episode 10 onward or something like that, for some inane reason.
That's probably true.
But no, Kuga is one of the reasons, the whole show is one of the reasons why I like early Heisei so much, pre-decade Heisei, or like, you know, first few seasons of Heisei. I think it's strong, and Kuga is a very strong showing at the beginning of it.
Oh yeah, that's what made you decide to start watching Agito next.
Yeah, I have watched Agito, I'll talk about that later though. Ichijo is a really great character. He's the perfect foil for Kuga.
Yeah, he really is. And their partnership is the core of the series. Like, what they accomplish together as characters.
Well, that's what you want to see.
They have separate casts, almost, to begin with, and they start to intermingle as it goes along.
Yeah, there's the cops, and there's the Kuga and his friends, and his sister, and his Sakurako, the translator.
Yeah, it's like Kuga and all the people he knows, and Ichijo and all the people he knows.
Yeah.
And eventually they become like one unit as time goes on, almost.
Yeah, they start intermingling and talking to each other and you know, pooling their resources towards the end.
Which is really cool to see, and that happens in a lot of other series, but there's always still somebody who's like, I'm only working with you because I have to.
They fight and they say the classic line, don't get in my way in this fight. You watch like a Japanese show for kids, like a shonen anime or like a Kamen Rider series or something like that, that has a character like that, and count how many times they say, don't get in my way in the beginning of a fight.
Mm, that's true.
It's like, you don't have enough fingers, motherfucker. If you do a drinking game, you'll be like, dead.
The main character's always like, dickhead secondary character, we're working towards the exact same fucking goal in the exact same way. We should work together. And they're like, no, I have different goals somehow.
Spectre!
Don't get in my way.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, I had a terrible coughing fit right there. That was terrible.
Liam, oof. Do you have a cold?
I must be coming down with something. It's so cold up here all the time in Canada.
In Canada land.
In Canada, the snowboy land.
What?
Snowland.
Okay.
Kuga's first arc is really good at setting up its characters, and is very good at setting up the situation. It's the Grongi are a very strong part of Kuga, and they're a good showing, because the show is not afraid to have them fucking murder innocent people by the hundreds.
The body count in Kuga is so far above every other body count in every other series.
It's, like you said, you told me when I was starting Kuga, in most other Rider series, the monsters will come out and they'll be like, oh, we're gonna get this one guy, or something. They'll go after one guy, and then just as they get to him, the Rider will interrupt them. In Kuga, it's like, yo, Kuga, there's a guy on the other side of town, there's a monster on the other side of town, he's killed like 600 people, and you should probably get there soon because he's going to kill another 150. And it's looking pretty rough.
The monster shows up and starts fucking killing people. He doesn't just knock over plastic furniture and rage for a while waiting for the hero to get there.
Yeah, exactly.
He shows up and starts killing people, and Godai's like in fucking Queens, and he needs to get to the Bronx.
I think we've had this discussion before, and that's why the cops give him such a fucking fast motorbike, because they're like, you need to get there before the deaths get into the triple digits, Kuga. You need to get there fast.
In pretty much every other Rider series, like, the monster starts attacking, and the Rider just jumps the fuck into frame.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah, because they don't want to, like, they don't want to make it seem like a lot of people are dying, I guess. It upsets the childs and their mothers.
Yeah, maybe.
This is the only show. I don't know if any other Rider series have done it. I don't know. But this is the only one I've seen where a kid dies on screen. There's a bit later towards the end of the series where there's, like, some Grongi who's got, like, a double sword, and she walks around with a double sword, and she cuts people's heads off with it. She just walks up to you and cuts your head off. And she cuts off the head of a mother and her child, and you see the kid's, like, she walks past the kid and she cuts him, and then the kid falls, and you don't see his head, but you see, like, his foot twitching on the ground as he hits the ground, and I was like, I saw that, I was like, holy shit, like, this is a show for children.
A kid.
Yeah, this is a show for, like, what, like, 8 to 12 year olds? Like, Jesus, fuck.
You can't even do that shit in Manhunt.
It's but it's so good at getting you against the Grongi, because, again, just like Kuga, they're not entirely realistic villains, they don't have a complex motivation, they just kill people for fun, it's a
hunt. Their motivation is that they're having a game to see who can kill the most people, and I guess that's sort of a realistic motivation when you think about it. Because the Grongi think that humans are just like cattle.
Yeah, it's like a...
So it would be like going out in the woods and having a competition to see who can kill the most turkeys.
Yeah, I suppose. You're going out on a quail hunt, except the quail are people. And it makes you hate the Grongi so fucking much. Like, you see innocent people dying on screen all the time, and it's a good hammer home. It's a bit of a cheap way to do it, but it works very well. It's effective. It gets you rooting for Kuga.
The Grongi are actually kind of terrifying as well, because they don't... There's no rhyme or reason to how they kill people. They just show up and start murdering people. Like, people are just having, like, a picnic. Or they're walking to the store, and then a fucking monster mash shows up and cuts their goddamn head off.
Well, that's the thing I like about them. There is a rhyme or reason, but it's very cryptic. It's like, they'll do a location that starts with Do, and then a location that starts with Ray, and then Me, and then Fa, So, La, Ti, Do, or just something weird like that. Or, like, they'll kill people wearing blue. Or just, like, they just pick a random thing. And it's not like they're trying to kidnap a scientist to build them a super bomb or something. They're just, what's that? You're in a pool? All right, you're fucking dead, mate. Everyone in this pool.
They care that little about human life, which makes you hate them even more.
Yeah, everything set up in Kuga in the first arc is great. It's one of my favorite, I think my favorite first arc in any Kamen Rider series. It sets up the dastardly villains, it sets up all the side characters, it sets up the main character very well, and his whole situation, and why you like him.
The villains feel a lot more dastardly in that way.
Yeah.
I mean, think about the Roid Mutes. They show up, and they make people move slow, and then they blow things up.
There was the bit in the Global Freeze segment where they kick a giant bowling ball and kill, like, 20 people. That was pretty fucked up. But beyond that, drives a pretty bloodless show, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you think about the dopants in Double. I mean, you haven't seen Double, but the dopants are just regular criminals who use their dopant power to do more crimes.
Yeah, to rob banks and shit.
Yeah, and, like, get revenge on people or whatever, and they always get stopped.
Okay.
And you understand their motivations immediately. But for a huge chunk of Kuga, you don't know what the fuck they're doing or why. They don't even speak a language you understand.
Yeah, and that's thing number two that Gaim stole from the show, is the language. They gradually, slowly but surely learn Japanese, but when they're in private early on, they just speak this gibberish language. And there is a translation. It's like a cipher for Japanese.
Yeah, it's like a cipher from Grongi to Japanese, and then you have to know Japanese to be able to understand.
Yeah, so forget that. But, like, they speak about their plans in Grongiese, and you don't know what the hell it is. That's like a big part of Kuga. You're not supposed to really get what they're doing. So it makes them a little more mysterious. It's kind of, I think that's one of the weaknesses. It's a bit of a letdown that their motivation is just, we do it for fun. But at the same time, it's like, you're expecting...
For fun, exactly.
It's like a ritual thing.
It's like a ritual to see which tribe becomes the new leader.
Yeah, the Gegeru, the one to see who is the strongest. But like at the same time, it's like you expect there to be some grand design behind it all. And it's like, it betrays your expectations in that way. It makes them seem more monstrous.
I think it was alright for me. I didn't think that they were going to have some grand reason behind it or anything. I thought it was just going to be like a game for fun when they started talking about it as a game.
Yeah.
And the fact that it actually had a reason behind the game was more than I even expected.
Yeah. The Grongi are a good part of Kuga.
The Grongi are really good, and you get like a part two of that in the Lords in Agito.
Oh, I'm...
Their motivation is very cryptic as well.
Don't spoil Agito. I gotta watch Agito.
I'm not gonna spoil Agito. Agito is a very, like, good successor series to Kuga. It builds on everything Kuga did right, fixes a lot of the problems with the pacing that Kuga had, but it feels a bit like a retread, so it never goes above Kuga's level.
Mm. Well, I'm excited to watch it. I
love Agito, by the way. Like, yeah. I would actually put Agito and Kuga on even footing.
Ooh.
I like them both a lot.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people saying Agito is fucking fantastic. I'm excited to keep going.
But we're not talking about Agito.
We're not talking about Agito. Maybe I'll talk about the first episode later, after we're done with Kuga, but...
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Another thing I really like about Kuga's early arcs is how he gets the powers, how he gets them right when he needs them, the new forms, and then you find out, you think, like, oh, it's so convenient, but there is a reason for it later in that, like, the belt, it's fused with him and it responds to his needs.
Yeah.
And it gives him, like, if he has to see really far, it turns into Titan, and then later on he can sort of do what it will. But, like, it's a neat thing to see him.
When he needs to see really far, it turns into Pegasus.
No, Pegasus is the armor form.
No, that's Titan.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Are you 100% sure?
Look it up on the internet, buddy.
Alright, this is gonna be...
Google.com.
This is gonna be a live reaction to
either... You're
gonna
cut this out, because you're wrong.
No. This is gonna be a live reaction to either me being right or me being wrong.
Okay.
Mighty form is the red one,
yeah.
Dragon form is the blue one, yeah.
Yep.
Pegasus is... Oh my god, I had him mixed up! Fuck you!
Who is the almighty master of Kuga?
I guess it's you, Jeff. Throughout the entire season, they never say the names of the forms. I guess
no,
it's just,
they're not.
It's just
they're
shit
not
they
really
put in the toy box.
In the show. This is my blue form.
Yeah, he's.
This is my green form.
That's another thing I like. He doesn't assign them these random names. He's just like, oh, I'm red. Oh, I'm blue. Oh, I'm green.
I love his reactions. He's like, oh, I'm blue. What does that mean?
And when he's talking about them, he's like, that guy's pretty far away. But if I turn green, I could probably see him. Like,
yeah.
It's like what an actual person would talk about being a superhero. He's like, I'll just turn green now. Like, he doesn't try to put some dumb name to it.
A person who hasn't already seen superhero materials.
Yeah. Someone who doesn't watch Kamen Rider.
I feel like we're at a point right now that, like, if you make a movie where somebody becomes a superhero, they should already know what a superhero is.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of aggravating, and especially, like, zombie shit. Where, like, zombies show up and people are like, oh my god, what are these things? Let's call them walkers.
They take place in a world exactly like our own, except nobody has ever made a piece of zombie media ever in history.
What a perfect world.
If I could get to that world, I could be rich. But no, unfortunately. But Kuga's forms are treated very well in the early game.
Kuga's forms are all exceptionally useful.
Yeah.
They all have real uses beyond, like... Think of Mozart. What the fuck is Mozart's use in Ghost?
For a second, I was like, think about the composer Mozart and all the forms he took
while
he was
composing. Think about Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart.
Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart almost never used his Pegasus form. It was very... He took it for granted.
Think about it in Ghost.
Yeah.
His Mozart form is... What does it do that any of his other forms can't do?
He can wave his arms and hurt you without even running up to you.
Like, he has four separate long-range forms?
Yeah, but that's because nowadays, we talked about this on an earlier episode, nowadays Kamen Rider is a lot more about toy politics than it was back in Kuga's day. Of course, there were toys of Kuga, certainly.
Yeah, there was, of course, like, Kuga had toys in mind. That's probably why he had so many forms.
He has, like, 10 forms at the end of the show, but yeah.
But they were just trying to sell action figures. They weren't trying to sell doodads that you shove into a belt.
Yeah, Kuga, like, it doesn't. It's not even a belt that you put on. It's like Showa. It just appears on you when you start transforming. So it's less.
Ghosts and specters appear on them as well.
Yeah, but most of the like newer riders, like Gaim,
that's actually
and Drive and...
the one thing I really love about the ghost belt.
I love that,
that
too.
It appears.
Yeah, it's a cool. It looks cool to have it. Like you go and it's like.
It also makes it so no one can take your belt.
Yeah.
Which
nice
happens
well.
A lot in other Heisei series.
Your belt, you can't get hit and have your belt fly off and fall into the lake next to you. It's never going to happen to
ghosts.
You
can't have your belt taken from you and your enemy transform into your rider form and then kick your ass, Fize.
I'm legit excited to watch Fize. When I'm done Agito, I'm watching Fize. I've decided.
I'm actually thinking about Fize, but I'm not thinking about Fize since I watched enough of it that I just don't fucking, I don't want
it. Oh boy, it looks cool.
I watched a lot of Fize, is the thing.
Okay.
I watched a little, I think I was around halfway into the series.
Okay.
And I was like, I cannot fucking handle this anymore.
It looks so cool. Everything I've seen of it looks so cool, and everyone tells me it's shit.
How long do you think you could watch a series if the only thing it had going for it is that the character's suits looked cool? You might actually like it because it has a lot of complete fucking assholes in it.
Yeah, I like inter-rider conflict. I like that in the show.
Do you like inter-rider conflict that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever and could be avoided?
That
with
sounds
one sentence.
That sounds frustrating, to say the
it's
least.
Very frustrating.
That sounds frustrating.
But we're not talking about Fize. We're talking about Kuga.
Let's avoid getting off track.
Stay on topic. What did you think of The Force Awakens, Lee?
Let's talk about Kuga's middle section. Let's talk about the weakest part of Kuga.
Yeah, it is the weakest part of Kuga, for whatever that's worth.
The plot doling out of Kuga is notoriously, well, I don't know notoriously, I don't know how many people share this gripe, but it's very bad. It's you get everything early on, and you get a great first arc, and then you get a good final arc, not as good as the first arc, but you get a decent final arc, and then there's this, like, 30 fucking episodes in the middle, where you're like, okay, alright, what's going on? There's a Grongi, and Kuga fights it, and Enokita's got a new bullet she's gotta do, and she makes the bullet, and then they shoot him with the bullet, and then Kuga kicks it, and it goes up. Kuga goes, maybe next time I'll kill another one.
Maybe that's the problem in general with having such a clear-cut goal in a Kamen Rider series. His goal from episode one is kill the Grongi.
Yeah.
And there's not a whole lot of, like, actually, the Grongi aren't so bad.
Yeah, there's...
Because the Grongi, they are so fucking bad.
The Grongi aren't a very multifaceted villain. They're just cold-blooded murderers who do it for a ritual, so there's not, like, layers that you can peel back on them and have that play out as the plot goes on. It's just, like, they're fucked up, we gotta kill them all, start to finish, it's just them killing them all. And that's, I think, where the J-drama part comes in, and starts to, I said it before, it cushions the impact of the terrible, it's not terrible, but it cushions the impact of the bad pacing in the middle.
Tell us how you really feel.
It's shit! I hate Kuga! I can't take any worse than worse! Fuck!
Anyway.
It's not good pacing in the middle. It's very slow.
It gets pretty glacial in the middle. And
yeah,
it's like, there are two different types of stories. There's the plot-driven story and the character-driven story. And it switches from a plot-driven story to a character-driven story for like the middle 30 episodes.
Yeah,
it's like a drama show. Like the status quo continues while the characters grow internally.
It's more like multiple tiny character driven stories, like placed into the show. Like what I thought was one of my favorite little plot lines in the whole show is Enokita trying to connect with her son.
Yeah,
and that has a great playoff. And Jean gets involved and tries to like because he kind of likes Enokita.
Yeah, he's got a thing for her.
Oh yeah. Or there's little bits of Godai's teacher. Godai reuniting with his teacher is absolutely the best couple episodes in the whole show.
Yeah, that's my favorite arc.
Some of the best arc in, or one of the best arcs in Rider history is those two with the teacher, and it doesn't have anything to do with the monster. The monster, the only thing that the monster fighting serves in that arc is, oh my god, is Godai gonna make it to see his teacher on time? If he doesn't get there, the teacher's gonna quit.
It's stressful. towards the end of that.
That stake, you give more shit about that than about the Grongi dying. You just kill it and get it over with. I want to see this. I want to see the drama. The scene where the teacher reveals the origin of the thumbs up, that little soliloquy he gives, is fantastic.
It makes you want a thumbs up.
And it doesn't have shit to do with the Grongi. It's great. But I think that's Kuga's real strength, is they carry you through it. You start to drop once the plot starts to slow down, and the show just fucking grabs you, and they're like, just do it, you asshole.
I think maybe I had less of a problem with the slowdown.
Okay.
Than you did in general.
I believe but the scientific like term is density shift, Jeff.
The density shift.
Yeah, thank you.
I had less of a problem with the density shift than you did.
Okay.
Because from an artistic standpoint, the cinematography in Kuga is fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Like, every shot is just composed so well. And I think that's a problem I bring up a lot with later Heisei shows, like, Decade onwards, maybe?
Decade is a real turning point.
Yeah, it is. And it's like, from then on, every shot is just a wide, flat shot. You get close-ups for characters, and you get snap cuts to hide special effects, and that's it.
Yeah, there's not a lot of exciting or interesting cinematography. There's not a lot of cool, like, moving camera moments, unless they're trying to follow someone on a motorcycle, and even then it's just kind of a straight shot of them from the side.
Yeah. You get a ton of cool moving camera stuff in Kuga. Like, they use that bike to its fucking maximum.
Go-Ram. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kuga,
the Tri-Chaser and the Beat Chaser, yeah. They get used like nobody's fucking business.
Kuga's
and
one of the last riders that rides, in case you didn't know.
Other riders ride, but he rides like it's on top of a fucking weapon.
And he is.
He's riding on a sword.
When he's got that armor on it, when it's yeah. Go-Ram.
But I mean, even when he's just driving around on his fucking dirt bike, it's like his dirt bike is a weapon.
He's spinning and kicking people and spinning the wheel into him.
Yeah, like running over enemies. He does that a lot.
Yeah, he busts through a lot of shit with that bike.
He sure does.
And there was even that little arc with the Grasshopper Grongi, the second Grasshopper Grongi that had a bike too.
Yeah, that was cool.
And they biked together. That was super awesome.
There was a whole lot of like lancing against each other, like dueling like knights. It was really cool.
Kuga had great bike use before you get to Ryuki, where it's just like, just have them get on the bike for one shot, and then the next shot they get off the bike.
I've driven the bike to my location. Now I'm done.
Just trick them into thinking they're riding, and then we'll call them riders. Mm, perfect.
The rider war. Shouldn't we be riding on something? Shh, 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 shh.
Kenzaki's like, oh shit, I gotta build these stupid ride shooters.
Kenzaki's in his fucking garage trying to build ride shooters out of what he's got.
That's why there's only like 11 riders, because he only wanted to build 11 ride shooters. That's all he had the money for. It's a contract.
I doubt all 11 riders use the ride shooters.
I bet Alternative didn't use the ride shooter.
No.
Asshole.
He mattered so much to the plot.
Oh boy, maybe when we do a Ryuki spoiler cast, I'll tell you all about Alternative Zero. But until then...
Oh boy.
Today we're talking about Kuga.
The cinematography is what I'm talking about, and every new episode had some kind of new type of shot in it compared to the previous one.
Yeah.
And it was visually exceptionally entertaining for me. Like, the fight scenes aren't, like, well choreographed. Like, Donnie Yen is not doing the choreography in this shit.
Unfortunately.
Which, Donnie Yen should really do some rider choreography. That would be fucking awesome.
Oh my god. I wish more people from other industries would get into rider, because it really shakes shit up.
Donnie Yen can learn, he knows both English and Mandarin and whatever other Chinese language there is.
Cantonese.
I think he could learn Japanese and get in rider as well.
You're smart, Donnie. Give us a call.
Give us a call.
We know you're listening.
We'll hook you up with John Toei.
Yeah, we got a direct link to old John. We'll set you guys up on a lunch date.
Anyway.
Anyway.
The choreography isn't anything to write home about, but it's...
I mean, no Showa series.
It's very entertaining, and Kuga has a lot of weight to his motions, and the fighting gets brutal sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's a shot that gets a lot of webums made of it, of Kuga getting impaled through the shoulder.
Oh, that one.
And
the
he
water
gets
monster.
Stuck to the wall.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's some shit, man.
Yeah, I like that. It's Kuga's action is pretty raw.
Yeah.
Shit, people get bled. People get punched.
It's realistic.
Yeah. It's like I said, it's another thing that adds to, like, this is the most realistic Rider series you've ever seen. It's very grounded for a show about Karate Bugman.
Yeah, there's a lot of handy cam in it that gives a lot of, like, kinetic motion.
The shaky,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like kind of like a behind-the-scenes kind of thing. Well, not like behind-the-scenes, like a documentary
like
style.
Yeah, like watching a documentary,
like
yeah.
You're seeing it as if you're there, and it's not shaky cam like a modern movie where they cut between 7,000 cuts
yeah.
and shake the camera. It's just handheld camera, and the cameraman is moving throughout the scene.
It's very cool.
It is very cool, and the locations that they shoot at are always really interesting. It's not just the same locations that's been in every other Rider series.
Yeah, the one repeated location from Kuga I can remember is the Grongi Museum. Or no, yeah. It's the Grongi, like, aquarium
yeah.
that they hang out in and drive. That was a nice little thing.
Like, I love the fight scene, I think it's with the first grasshopper, that takes place in the abandoned train station.
Oh, no, the first grasshopper, I think, was in an apartment complex, and he, like, jumps all the way up it from, like, the
oh,
center
yeah,
courtyard.
Oh, yeah, he jumps from the top down and keeps hitting him.
Yeah, that's
Who
when he gets dragged.
Who was on the train tracks?
I think
then?
It was the rhino on the train tracks?
Maybe, but that was, like, a really awesome scene.
Yeah.
Just visually, it's very interesting. Like, story-wise, the plot doesn't come out. It's like it's a drip. We made that comment a lot with Drive, but it's like the pipes are kind of frozen drip.
Yeah, with Kuga. The way he gets the rising forms is very cool. That was something that happened in the middle that I was very interested in, how he gets fucking murdered.
Oh, yeah.
And they hit him with the shocks, and he, like, the belt is energized by the electricity, and it's like, it's a neat upgrade because it's like something that the belt was never supposed to have. They didn't have electricity back then.
Yeah.
I guess you get hit by a bolt of lightning or something, but, like, it, like, jolts the belt to life, and it... Oh, you're fucking golden now. You're a badass. The only problem I have with it is he gets shocked, he gets the new forms. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it's time for Ultimate Kuga, he's like, oh, how do I get Ultimate Kuga? Just fucking shock me again. Just shock me a lot this time. And they're like,
I mean,
okay.
That's a natural progression. That would be the first thing I would try.
That's true, but it should have been something cool, like he grabs some power lines or something. Just do something a little different with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, grabbing power lines would have been a really good way. And then you could do a cool, like, shot where you
the
have
whole
all
city
the lights
loses
in the
power.
City go out.
Yeah, he takes it all for the belt.
That would have been pretty fucking sweet.
To save them all. That would have been awesome, but it was a bit of a lame thing. It was not
I guess
a lot.
In a way it was like his friends were helping him as well.
Yeah, it's another...
Which I guess is very Japanese.
It's very Kuga to have the characters keep being there and keep helping throughout the whole series. It's something that Rider should do more.
I have a quick question.
Okay.
Do you think, in your infinite wisdom,
okay,
that Sakurako had a thing for Godai?
Maybe that Sakurako had a thing for Godai, but never that Godai had a thing for Sakurako. I think Godai saw her 100% as a friend. I don't think
yeah.
he has that sort of capacity in him.
Like, we've talked about before, Godai's like a giant man-child.
Yeah.
He doesn't... I could not imagine him in any sort of romantic relationship.
he's like... I can imagine girls taking to him. He's handsome, he's charismatic, he's pretty fit.
Like, Nana seems all about him.
Well, Nana's, like, 14, though, so fuck her. She's... Ugh.
Yeah, she doesn't care. She's a teenage girl.
I guess, yeah. But she doesn't
care. Godai doesn't think of her as anything except a little sister figure.
Yeah,
like,
basically.
Like, he thinks of everyone. Ichijo.
Even
is
Ichijo.
His little sister.
I don't think...
A friend of mine went to... Yeah, my friend
my
went
friend.
To fanfiction.net.
So I went there for a friend. I was just looking. He wanted me to find.
This is actually a friend of mine. I would never fucking step foot on fanfiction.net.
Okay.
Anyway.
Continue. We all believe you. Continue.
Okay, as long as everyone believes me.
Okay, yeah.
And the number one pairing, or no, number one is AG and the Birdman from O's.
Ankh,
yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, number two is Godai and Ichijo in Kamen Rider.
Like a gay thing, or...?
No, like, a love thing. Yes, a gay thing, idiot. Have you ever even seen fan fiction on the internet?
Yeah, I guess I shouldn't be surprised at all. I didn't get any romance vibes from those two either.
No,
they were buds.
You can't be friends in things.
No, I guess no one. Yeah, you can't. If you have a large fan base, you cannot be friends. Everyone thinks you're fucking, regardless of.
And they are like the bestest of friends by the end of the series.
Yeah, yeah. They have a very strong mutual respect for each other, for sure.
But like I said, gay or straight, I could not see Godai having romantic feelings for anybody or anything.
No, he's got some growing up to do. Maybe that world
he
traveling.
He only cares about protecting smiles and going on Boken.
And learning 2,000 skills by the year 2000.
I wonder if he did.
I think he learned his 2,000 skill around like episode 40 something.
His 2,000 skill should have been being a Kuga main.
That would have been a great ending to that plot arc. His 2,000 skill would be being a true hero or something like that.
Yeah,
that'd be kind of cheesy, but I would love it.
That's what's gonna happen in Ghost.
We'll see about Ghost. Yeah, Kuga's middle part, I think, is the sticking point. Like, that's... Remember the joke came around that, like, oh, Liam's gonna take forever to finish Kuga.
Yeah,
was, like, in the 30s or something during that, and I was, like, one episode every 2 weeks, like, oh, I guess I'll watch
Kuga.
It was,
like, fucking 6 weeks later. You finished that shit.
It was so slow, but then once you get into, like, the 40s, it starts becoming way easier to shotgun because Daguva shows up, and the show starts to get going towards its conclusion, and that bat asshole starts to, like, chase after the power of Daguva, and everyone starts to sort of, like, it builds. It begins building, and Kuga's ending is good. I have problems with it.
Really?
It's not perfect, but it is...
Well, nothing is perfect.
Okay, yeah, but I have gripes. It's not...
What's your gripe?
What is my gripe? Okay, there's this one part when Kuga gets, he's about to get ultimate form, right?
Okay.
And Daguva shows up. At the end of one episode, he says something. Kuga beats a monster, and then Daguva is, like, talking to, I think it's B1 on top of a building. And he's like, I'm here, and I'm gonna fuck shit up. And then at the beginning of the next episode, the show has skipped over a fight between Godai and Daguva. And, like, you see it in, like, these vague, brief flashbacks, and then the show just treats it like you've seen it the whole thing. And Godai's, like, in the hospital, and they're like, oh, he sustained so many wounds during that fight.
I understand why that was done.
And why is that?
Because the Godai versus Daguva fight was supposed to be, like, the big payoff of the whole series.
Yeah, but...
And showing it twice...
I think...
might devalue it a bit.
I think...
I'm with you on this, though, in that they should have shown the fight.
Okay, you're with me, but I'm not with you. I think if Daguva and Kuga fight...
What the fuck does that mean?
I don't know, man. I disagree with what you just said. I think if Daguva and Kuga fight, and Kuga gets his fucking ass kicked, just like Empire Strikes Back, right? Luke fights Vader, Luke gets his hand cut off, spoilers. He gets his ass kicked, and it becomes...
Well, this is the spoiler.
And it becomes all the more satisfying when he overcomes it later, right? It adds more weight to the... to the victory later.
I was playing devil's advocate if you didn't pick that up, shitface. I said I agree with you. They should have shown the fight.
You were playing devil's advocate.
I was playing Kamen Rider devil's advocate.
And from what they show, it's a cool fight. Like, he's laughing and he's like, oh, where's your smile now, Kuga? Why don't you give me a smile, huh, bitch? And he's like, he's saying that shit and he's like just thinking and all the cars are lighting on fire around him. But, like, I watching the flashback, I was like, I want to fucking see that. Why didn't you show me, you motherfuckers?
Budgetary restraints, I would imagine.
Perhaps some time restrictions. Something went drastically wrong during shooting, and they were like, just cut it out or something. I don't know.
I feel like it was purposeful. They thought that only showing the one fight would be a better payoff than showing two of them. Like, they didn't want to show Daguba's strength that early, maybe? I don't know.
Well, they were wrong. That's a shame.
I agree. They really should have shown that fight.
That's like, it's just one thing that I don't like about the ending of Kuga, but it's such a huge sticking point to me because it's such a huge plot point in the show, is their first fight, and the show just fucks it. It's just not done very well. It loses a lot of its weight. It feels limp.
I don't know if I agree with that. I don't think it's that big of a problem.
I think it's a big problem. I think
it detracts, certainly, and it detracts heavily, but I don't think it's, like, the end of the world type situation for the series.
It's literally the end of the world. It's a strong mishandling.
What did you think about the actual final confrontation, though? Because this is a sticking point between Kamen Rider Kuga fans and idiots. How did you feel about it?
I loved it. I adored it, actually. It wasn't overly flashy. It wasn't overly complex. It was simple. They light each other on fire. They punch the holy fuck out of each other in the snow. And then it cuts. And Kuga has won. I love it. It's perfect.
So you are not an idiot. There's actually good. A lot
I'm
of
I'm glad
people...
I have the Jeff not an idiot stamp.
There are a lot of people in the comments section of Facebook videos of the final episodes of Kuga.
The main audience for Kamen Rider Facebook that are, commentators.
That are complaining quite heavily about how un-action-packed that scene is and how it should have had them using their powers all out.
I think that would have detracted. Like, the tone of Kuga is that it's gritty and it's realistic. And I think having them do all, like, using full maximum use of their forms would have detracted a little bit from that. It doesn't feel natural as them just, like, fucking rolling around in the snow and just beating the holy hell out of each other.
It's... They're so evenly matched at this point.
Yeah.
That any number... Like, there's only a few strikes before both of them are even thrown out of their fucking forms.
Yeah,
like,
and they're
they
both...
They pretty much destroy one another's belts straight out because they're not... stupid.
They're all bloodied and tired and slouched over, and Kuga's crying and Dagova's laughing, and it's a good scene, and their characters are on full display. I don't care if the fight choreography isn't the most complex.
I thought it was brutal as fuck. I
yeah,
really
absolutely.
Loved it.
Yeah.
And, like, I was talking about cinematography earlier, that is a gorgeous fucking fight scene with the snowstorm happening.
It's fantastic.
I absolutely love it, especially, like, the long shot when they start walking towards each other.
Yeah, and they're both on fire. They both light each other on fire, because they have...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they, like, great. force of will the fire away and then start running towards each other.
Yeah, oh, it's such a
but
cool
I mean,
scene.
Like, the long shot where they're standing really far apart and they just slowly start walking towards each other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And all you see is, like, the black of Ultimate Kuga and, like, the gold parts of Dagova walking towards each other.
Yeah, oh, it's so neat.
It really is. It's a beautiful scene.
Oh, I have another problem.
Uh-oh.
With the final part of Kuga. During the course of the series, the Gronki kill fucking like tens of thousands of people just scattered over the course of this. So they kill so many people.
Mm-hmm.
Just like in and around Tokyo. And yet you don't really ever see the effects of that. Like, people are still going to school and going to work and walking around and still all crowded and stuff. I think if they had had...
There has to be people walking around for the Gronki to kill.
Yeah, but I think if they had had just one scene or something, one or two scenes... Where, like, maybe Ichijo is driving somewhere and he passes by an abandoned apartment building or something, and someone's like, oh, you know, there were two Gronki attacks close to there, and everyone just cleared out. Like, half the police died, and everyone else left because they didn't want to be close anymore or something. Just
that's
like
actually
some...
That's one of my gripes about pretty much every Kamen Rider series that has monsters attacking people.
Because it never feels like a crisis.
No, the only series that ever felt like a crisis, and it had to get to the point where, like, the United States is nuked, is Gaim.
Yeah, I guess spoilers, everybody in the U.S. dies in Gaim.
Yeah, we're all fucking dead in the Gaim universe.
Canada's safe, though, everything's fine over here.
No, Canada gets nuked.
No! They just shoot it back at, they shoot it back at Jeff's house.
Okay.
They're like, fuck this guy.
How much has Jeff spent on Kamen Rider Gaim toys? Not enough! So yeah, that's a big sticking point I've had with everything in Rider, and I think it's just something I had to get used to at some point.
It's a shame. It's a shame.
Because, I mean, like, there are monsters fucking killing people all over the place in Blade. They're just murdering the fuck out of people.
Mm-hmm.
And people just go about their business.
Yeah, I guess it's not as bad, I think, in other series, because they don't give you numbers. But in Kuga, they're like 700
people. But I mean, there's a fucking,
people.
Like, there's an alien invasion happening in Kabuto, to the point where everybody needs that necklace to...
Oh, that's true.
And, like, throughout the whole series, people are just, like, going to restaurants and fucking walking around, having a good time.
Yeah, and it takes place, like, 10 years after the invasion, too. And
the invasion has been going on this whole time.
And it's still there, and society doesn't really seem to have changed in any meaningful way other than nobody goes back to Shibuya ever.
Yeah.
But I don't know, it's just...
In Kuga, it really is the numeration that causes the problem. Like, in Kabuto, it could be that there's only an attack by the worms once every, like, year.
Man, those episodes are spaced out real far apart.
Like, before the first episode.
Oh, before, okay, yeah, yeah.
And that might be why people are going about their business. But in Kuga, like, hey, did you hear three blocks over that, like, 900,000 people died yesterday?
900,000 people.
Let's go out and get some ramen.
900,000 people converged on one location, and then they were all killed by, like, an owl grungy or something. Anyways, out to school.
Let's go get some ramen.
Let's go to the mall.
Let's get some. Let's go see a movie.
Let's go converge with hundreds of people at the mall.
Hey, you want to go swimming?
Oh, what scumbags the Grongi are.
They're fucking awful.
I love them. I love scumbag, awful, irredeemable villains. Like, I like a good complex villain more.
Yeah.
But I love, with all my heart, a villain who's just like, I'm just a fucking prick. On the deepest, most ultimate level, I'm just a scummy, disgusting thing, and...
I feel like you would like... This is neither here nor there with what we're talking about, but I feel like you would like Black Manta.
Oh, he's...
Like Aquaman's
villain. Yeah, Aquaman's guy.
Like, Aquaman is... He's been, like, tormenting Aquaman for fucking, like, months or whatever. He, like... Spoilers, killed Aquaman's son and cut his fucking arm off.
This is the DC Comics spoiler cast.
And Aquaman is like... Why are you doing this? And he's like, because I don't like you.
I don't like your face, sir.
He's like, because I hate you. You're just awful. I hate you. That's why I'm doing this.
What an asshole.
He's just a huge fucking asshole.
That's great. That's so great. It's like, I guess I just finished Jessica Jones. Kilgrave in Jessica Jones is kind of the same. He's just such a... Fuck.
He's just a big fucking rapist.
He's like a huge baby who's so used to getting what he wants. I love him.
I don't know if you're allowed to say you love a rapist, Liam.
I love the idea. I love him as a character, as a villain. He's great.
I thought that was, like, we're not gonna talk
about
it.
Let's not talk about Jessica Jones. It was a decent show.
It was alright. It was no Daredevil.
It was no Kuga.
It was no Kamen Rider Kuga.
Yeah, those are the two big gripes I have with Kuga's ending. Otherwise, I really, really like the final fight. I really, really love the last episode.
The last episode is, like, I can understand where people get his Mary Sue-ness from, that last episode.
Yeah.
Because everyone in that episode is like, I fucking love this guy.
But he's had
the
time.
Best, but the he's earned that shit.
The thing about a Mary Sue is they like the character right away. And
for
no
reason.
Good reason. But yeah. Kuga, he fucking saved the world. Of course they're gonna like him, and he's a nice guy.
I feel like... It's unbelievably unrealistic when a character saves the world and nobody gives a shit about them.
Yeah.
Like, that happens in the movie of Blade. Like, after the world's been saved or whatever, Kenzaki becomes like a fucking trash man and nobody remembers him.
He's like, they're like, yo, what are your credentials for this job of working at McDonald's? He's like, I saved the world once. I'm like, okay, okay, get a mop.
And like... They meet the new generation riders, like Mr. Beautiful
Face. Oh, is this
Face.
Missing Ace?
Yeah, Missing okay, Ace. Yeah. Like, Mr. Beautiful Face, who smiles a lot.
Yeah, that beautiful man.
He, like, they just shit all over him. And call him, like, an old-timer, and say his time's over and everything. And I'm like, you only exist because of this guy.
Shouldn't this fucker be getting, like, a congressional medal and money for life or something like that?
And it's fucked up because, like, the dude who drinks milk all the time, the guy who's completely useless the entire series, becomes, like, a billionaire from selling a book about the Kamen Riders.
Guess Blade should have thought of that, asshole.
Blade's a fucking, like, he picks up trash for a living, which is a very noble thing. But everybody just shits on him.
Trash man pays. It's a civil servant job. It pays pretty well.
I think this is what we said last time we talked about
it. Yeah, he's
at
like...
At the end of Kuga becomes a vagabond again.
He loves to travel. Kuga ends with a... I remember somebody emailed us, like, a week or two before I finished Kuga, and they said, how would you change Gaim's ending if you could change it and couldn't just erase it? And I said... No henshins, no fights. Just show us where everyone is, like, 6 months.
It would be like a Kuga
ending. And then I watched Kuga's ending, and I was like, oh, well, what about it? This is exactly what I wanted out of Gaim's ending.
And it's like 3 months later.
No fights, just this is where everyone's at, and this is where Kuga's at, and he's still...
Yeah, it shows how Godai affected all of their lives.
Yeah.
and what happened afterwards, and it dances around showing what Godai's up to this whole time. Everybody just says he's off on an adventure.
Yeah, you see a couple little shots of him on the beach, but, like, never, nothing...
It never shows his face.
Yeah, not until the very end.
And he's still Godai, the Godai we know. He, like, runs off to stop kids fighting and juggles to entertain
them. The power of the belt did not corrupt him is the big payoff of that episode. Which is great. It was everything it needed to be. Perfect send-off.
And you get to hear Godai speak Spanish. Which is nice.
Oh, it's always good. You get to see children who are not Japanese and have shock and awe when a non-Japanese person appears in Kamen Rider.
That's always strange. Like, even when people go to other countries or other worlds...
Everyone's Japanese.
In Tokusatsu, everybody there is Japanese.
They all speak Japanese.
Like, that's my favorite part of the Space Sheriff movies, is that everyone in space speaks Japanese.
It's like Star Trek.
And everyone who's in space and a human being is Japanese.
Of course. That's like every time Jean was on screen, it was like getting kicked in the face. You're like, holy shit, a white guy. And he's speaking English, too. He comes, he's like, hello, good morning. And you're like, ah! Like,
oh my god, I'm not Japanese, I watching? Forgot!
I must have put in my DVD of CSI by mistake, there's a white guy here.
That's why I love in, like, martial arts movies, like, the martial arts guy will be kicking everybody's ass, and then, like, a wall will slide open or something, and just a big fucking giant white wrestler will walk in.
Yeah, in American movies, like, in American action movies, they fight a big Russian. In America, or in, like, kung fu movies, they fight a big American. That's how it is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, in Game of Death, the Bruce Lee movie, he fights fucking Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. It's great. And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar kicks him in the chest, and it leaves a footprint on his chest.
Oh my god.
His entire midsection size. It's so great.
That's awesome.
Just seeing Jean for the first time in Kugo, I was like, what the fuck?
He was such a weird... He was a cool guy. I liked him.
Yeah, he was a good dude.
He was just like all of Kuga's supporting cast, I terribly enjoyed Jean.
It seemed like he wasn't going to be a real supporting character to begin with. Like, he was just there to show up and say, good morning.
Yeah, but he does a lot of work on Go-Rom, and I think they made him involved with Enokita towards the end just to kind of give him something to do. Like, he just suddenly cares about this kid because he says his parents also kind of neglected him, which is good enough.
Yeah, that's a good enough reason to try and help a kid out.
Yeah. So, they kept him up for the whole series. He was good.
He's actually, fairly decent at speaking Japanese, it sounds like, as well, which is not so common in Kamen Rider.
Not so common.
I just made that joke. Oh, shit.
I know, I just, it wasn't obvious enough. I decided.
I hate you.
Okay.
I fucking hate you. Okay. Anyway, like in, Kyoryuger?
Don't ask me, I don't watch Sentai. There was a white guy in Kyoryuger,
anyway,
I know.
I don't, fuck that part. I'll talk about Shinkinger instead with Richard Brown.
Oh, Shinken Brown. Yeah.
Yeah, Shinken Brown, quote-unquote. Richard Brown is a character, a guy who speaks fluent fucking Japanese perfectly, and they made him speak it stiltedly, like he didn't understand it well.
It's like, hey, everybody in the U.S. who watches this show, this is what we think of you.
Speaking of that shit, there's a dude in Forze who's half white.
Yeah.
And he plays, like, the football star.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to disguise himself as an American.
Okay.
And he wears this ratty blonde wig and this giant fucking fake nose to be an American. I was I'm offended as fuck.
I love that shit is still acceptable over there. That's my favorite.
I was offended as fuck. I feel like he should be too.
Now you know what it's like on the other side.
Are you calling me a racist right now?
Yeah.
You get for being a racist, Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff. Everybody knows who listens to this podcast knows that Jeff is a blatant racist.
I just cannot allow Canadians in front of me.
I'm sorry, the Canadians are inferior in everything they do.
They are. Canadians are the inferior race.
Oh.
They have poor Canadian genes that have been frozen in the Great White North.
The genes taste like maple syrup if you lick them.
Oh, we're going for that low-hanging fruit, are we?
You already made a joke about colds.
Maple syrup! Hockey! Polar bears!
Hang on, friend. You started this train. You started talking about the cold weather. That's how it always starts. I can go anywhere from there, and it's always up. So fuck ya.
It's always up north.
That was... Oh, fuck you. Seriously, are we done talking about Kuga? It was a very good show.
I actually wanted to talk about Kuga's design. It's a very simple design. It's just a chest piece and a helmet and then the glove parts and the boot parts, and that's it.
Yeah, it's very curvy. It's very simplistic. It's very slick.
It's very aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah.
And it's very simple, and it's one of my favorite rider designs for that reason. It's like super modular in a way because it changes shape constantly throughout the series.
Yeah.
In each new form, and each form is like immediately recognizable as Kuga.
Yeah, his head stays the same, so you always have the horns and the eyes and the mouth, and you can see, but even the chest parts, they still sort of keep a sort of theme of like that segmented chest,
yeah.
When the segments change shape and stuff like that. You can still kind of tell.
It's a very nice... I absolutely love Kuga's design, Agito's design as well.
Oh, yeah.
And I think they complement each other so well, and I'm just fucking... I'm gonna lament until my dying day that they never did a crossover with Kuga and Agito.
Yeah, that's a shame. That's a shame.
And I understand why. They talk about in a director's, summary or something of Agito that they dropped it being a sequel to Kuga. Because it would make no sense for Godai to not come and fight the Lords.
Yeah, right from the start, you think he'd be there.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it would be easy enough to just say he's in Cuba or something.
Well, here's the thing. There was a bit at the end of Kuga where they talk about how the belt, Kuga's belt, if it detects you've become too powerful or too horrible or something, it turns to sand. And it doesn't turn to sand because Kuga's such a great guy.
Yeah, it's the Goram that does that.
No, it's Goram? I thought it was the belt that did that.
It's the Goram, because they say it's still in police lockup and it's still whole.
Oh, shit. Okay, never mind. I'm mistaken. I could have said something like, oh, he turned ultimate and then the belt busted from the overflow of the power or something.
Yeah,
but I guess I'm fucked up.
They show the scans of four scans of the belt. It's like really, it's subtle. But the belt is reforming in each of the scans.
Yeah, it's getting more solid.
So it's coming back.
Yeah.
And they talk about in, director's materials about Kuga that the belt survived and it's just being fixed as time goes along.
It could have been, it took him a while for it to get fixed. He doesn't show up until 30 or something. I don't know.
They could have just had him show up in, a movie or something afterwards.
I would have taken anything, but I guess we'll have to take the PS2 game.
Take the card game that has both of them.
Card games can be fun.
No, they can't.
The Pokemon card game on the Game Boy was pretty fun.
Yeah, it was alright.
It was pretty cool. Pretty bad.
I'd rather just play Pokemon.
I guess, yeah. Rather play a Kamen Rider card game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is a Kamen Rider card game.
Which?
Gamberizing.
Don't say fucking Gamberizing. It's not a
it's
card
Gamberizing.
Game.
Gamberizing.
You don't have a hand and you don't play cards.
It's a game that you play with cards.
It's not like a deck building game, you know what I mean?
No, it's not a deck building
game. Magic the Gathering or anything like that.
The problem with that is what the fuck do you do for a card game for Kamen Rider?
What you do. You rip off UFS. You ever play UFS?
What's UFS?
Oh, it's such a cool... Okay, it's like a card game
Ultimate
where you just
fighting shit?
Universal fighting system. You have one... Picture this, okay? You have one rider, right? Your deck... You don't have multiple riders. Say your deck is a Kamen Rider Joker deck.
Okay.
And you put out Kamen Rider Joker, and he's your fighter. He's always on the field or whatever. And then you, play moves for him and stuff. You play, a kick, or you play a power-up, or something like that. And that's how you play the game. I think that'd be sick.
Cool.
There you go.
That'd be pretty cool.
There you go, Bandai. There's one for free.
Why don't you develop that shit?
I should.
You're not doing anything with your life.
Kickstarter, here we come.
The Rider Club Radio Kamen Rider Card Game.
Oh.
Order today.
Oh, boy. It's just a fucking ripoff of UFS, so...
100% original content. Maybe you'd build a Kuga deck.
Oh. Kuga was great. That's
Kuga's a good series. I wouldn't give it a 10 out of 10 because of how slow it gets in the center. It's very draggy.
Yeah.
What would you give it if you had to give it an out of 10?
I would give it a solid 7.75.
What the fuck kind of point systems?
I'll give it an 8. I'll give it an 8.
That's, I agree.
I'll round up.
I would give it an 8 or a 9.
Okay.
I give it an 8.5.
I would not entertain giving it a 9, but I would definitely give it a solid 8.
It's as high up on the list of Kamen Rider series as I feel like Kamen Rider can get thus far.
So would you say it's your favorite then?
It's really hard for me to choose between it and a couple other series.
Okay. Like, I know you like Double a lot, and...
I do like Double a lot. It's been 5 years since I saw Kuga all the way through. It's been 4 years since I saw Kuga all the way through. It's been 5 or 6 since I saw Double all the way through, so... Ooh.
You've been in this shit for a while, haven't you?
Oh, my God. It's time to hang up my fucking DVD player.
Hang up your DVD? What, are you gonna tie a rope to it or something? Okay, that's Kuga.
I hate you.
Can we talk about episode 1 of Agito now?
Yeah, go right ahead.
So I finally finished Jessica Jones, and I started watching episode 1 of Agito. I just seen episode 1 last night, and I thought it was a very, very strong first episode. Actually, I thought it was great. So far.
It was a very strong first episode. It introduces the characters that you need to know, and it gives a lot of focus to the secondary already.
Yeah, I love Hikawa. I love
Hikawa's a great character. He's kind of the hapless everyman.
Yeah, I like that character in Rider. It's the same reason everyone likes Kagami so much, right?
Yeah.
Hikawa's kind of like the company man. He's got the suit. He's the I love the whole G3 team too. Like when he puts on G3 suit. And then the monster appears, and they're like, oh shit, we get to try G3. And they're like, well, we don't have permission. They're like, I don't give a fuck, just send it out. Hikawa, get ready. And they're just so excited about it, and Hikawa's so excited about it. And then he just gets his ass handed to him, which is my favorite part. The secondary is
G3 looks cool. Wait until he gets to G3X.
Oh my God. No, I know what G3X looks like. It's the most badass G3X suit.
Is fucking amazing.
But like, I love that he's... It's like, it's this very strong contrast of technology and magic.
Yeah.
And technology is just nothing compared to the magic.
Technology has a long way to go before it can reach the same level as magic.
Yeah, because it takes Agito. Agito appears and just destroys the monster that kicked G3's ass in like 2 seconds, and it's a really cool scene.
How do you feel about Shoichi as a character so far?
I don't have enough of a grasp on Shoichi yet. All I know is that he's kind of a goof, just like Kuga. He's got amnesia, and he's unusually good at farming.
He's like a goof like Kuga, but even more so. Like, I wouldn't call Godai dumb.
Yeah.
But I might call Shoichi dumb.
Okay.
He's not stupid. He's just kind of slow.
Okay. The only thing I know
He's a really good guy, and he's... He just has this worldview that's so simplistic.
I know about Good Eats Smooth Poops. And I know he runs a restaurant in Ryuki. I remember that part in the movie.
He loves to cook.
Yeah.
He's a great chef.
Yeah.
And a lot of people complain that Shoichi doesn't seem like he's Agito. Like, when he transforms, it's like an entirely different character. But that's like a plot point.
Oh.
That, like... Agito is...
Whoa, don't fucking tell me, mate. I'm only on episode 1.
It's not, like, spelled out, buddy. It's not, like, a thing that they say later.
Okay, fine.
But Agito is, like, he runs on pure instinct when he's Agito. And he just, like, he's overtaken by it, almost.
Yeah.
And I actually really enjoyed that.
Okay. I'm very, very excited to keep watching Agito. The first episode was pretty strong. So
too bad he dies.
I want to see more.
He gets shot 8 times by Ichijo.
Ichijo shows up with the special bullets and shoots the gas bullets in him, and that's the end of Agito. Good job.
The unidentified life forms are back.
He looks like a Grongi. Well, he looks like Kuga.
He looks like Kuga.
I'm sure someone would see that and be like, "Holy shit, they're back!"
That's what they do say in the first episode. When they talk about the lords.
Yeah, they call them unidentified life forms a couple times.
Yeah, they decide to call them unknown by the end of the episode.
In English. It's pretty good, though. I can't wait to see it. It's going to be a cool show, I think.
You know, like, there's a lot of focus on Kuga's forms?
Yeah.
Agito has forms as well, but they just sort of happen, and nobody comments on them.
Okay, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, it's just a natural progression of his powers, I guess. Okay. They talk about him getting stronger, but they don't ever really mention him changing forms much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And his forms aren't really visually distinctive.
Yeah, okay. I'll be prepared for that. I'll brace myself.
But it's about the characters in Agito as well, and they, because the three main characters are all riders.
Yeah.
I
assume Ryo is Gills?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The focus on them is, you can see them grow as characters and also their fighting and stuff, and yeah. The writers felt a lot more comfortable with that.
Yeah, I'm fucking excited to watch a series that's got more than one writer again. I missed that. Kuga.
I actually feel like Kuga's a breath of fresh air in that way.
Yeah, I guess.
Because I get so used to Heisei.
It's true, but I like lots of writers. You know me. I like
two writers.
I like a shitload.
Which hardly ever happens.
I like at least 10 or else the show sucks.
Oh my god.
Not many Kamen Rider shows are good in my opinion.
Oh my god. I think if you have more than four, that 99% of the rest of them ain't gonna get shit focus on them whatsoever.
Well, if you make the plot all about all the riders and not have any Monsters of the Week, you can do it.
I really feel like most of the Ryuki riders are completely unmemorable.
Well, the ones like fucking Scissors and them that have one arc and then they're done. They're just meant to be like...
They're completely unmemorable.
They're just meant to be villains of the arc and then they're gone. Which I think is a pretty good way to use them if you're gonna have that many.
The only riders I really remember are like... Oja, Zolda, and Raya, besides Knight and
What about Ryuki. Odin? You remember Odin?
Oh, fuck Odin.
What? What's the matter with Odin? I mean, he's dumb,
Odin's
but...
so fucking cool.
He's dumb, but he's, like, all over the show. How could you forget Odin?
I guess I remember him. I didn't think of him just then.
I guess you didn't remember him.
Yeah.
I guess I remember him now that you've reminded me. Okay, so that was the Cougar spoiler cast, everyone.
They're very dangerous. Stay out of the woods.
I have a bad history recently with mispronouncing and misspelling rider names, but hopefully I'll get past it.
Are you gonna tell our viewers about that or listeners?
No, actually I'm not.
Okay.
Good night, everyone.
Everybody have a good week. If you want to send us an email, you can at riderclubradio@gmail.com. You can talk to us on Twitter, where you can see Liam type a bunch of shit drunkenly sometimes, at Rider Club Radio.
You might catch that if you're lucky. If I get home and I'm a little shaken up and I'm feeling frisky.
Or you can just interact with us anyway. You can send your questions anywhere and we'll answer them on the show or we'll answer them right there.
Okay.
Thanks for tuning in for the spoiler cast. You might get a Ryuki spoiler cast or an Agito spoiler cast in the next couple years.
I think Ryuki's next on my list of what I want a spoiler cast.
All right, tune in next week where we probably talk about Kamen Rider Ghost.
If all goes well.
See ya.
Bye. Sugite yuku kedo ima ni